Random House Audible presents 21 Dog Years, Doing Time in Amazon.com by Mike Daisy. Read for you by the author.
Epigraph. It is difficult not to marvel at the imagination which was implicit in this gargantuan insanity. If there must be madness, something may be said for having it on a heroic scale. John Kenneth Galbraith, The Great Crash. It was one of those rare smiles with a quality of eternal reassurance in it that you may come across 4 or 5 times in life. It faced, or seemed to face, the whole external world for an instant, and then concentrated on you with such an irresistible prejudice in your favor. It understood you just so far as you wanted to be understood, believed in you as you would like to believe in yourself, and assured you that it had precisely the impression of you that, at your best, you hoped to convey. Precisely at that point, it vanished. F. Scott Fitzgerald, The Great Gatsby. Chapter 1. Dilettante. When Amazon went to temping companies to recruit future employees, it gave a simple directive: send us your freaks. I know this is true because the people at the temping companies, not the sharpest knives in the drawer, would tell the people they were recruiting that this was the requirement. Not that it stopped me, no sir. I might not precisely regard myself as a professional freak, but as job descriptions go, it falls well within my range. I am a dilettante. I do many things, but none particularly well. It is the art of not applying yourself, the only craft I've studied my entire life. Like so many others of my generation, I cherish the delusion that I have superpowers buried deep inside me. They're awaiting the perfect trigger: radiation, a child in danger. And in that defining moment, I will finally know my birthright. Mutant healing factor, terrifying strength, maybe kick-ass retractable adamantium claws. In a good daydream, it's all three. When you know that you are destined for greatness by virtue of your mutant heritage, it is difficult to apply yourself to normal life. Why waste the effort when you know that your potential is so tremendous? Better to wait. Better not to try to save yourself for the great works to come. Nothing you do will ever be more than a footnote in light of your own unimaginable future. So save your breath and bide your time. Nurture your talent. Read a book. Play Nintendo. It's a depressing life. The word dilettante derives from the Italian dilettare, meaning to delight in. Well, no one buys that, not even the dilettantes. It's a tough racket that favors the young. I was 25 and rapidly becoming the only practicing dilettante left from my college class. Being a dilettante is the opposite of having a viable career. And most people discover they don't enjoy starving, so they find a life and quickly settle into their private hells by choice or inertia. I do have an advantage in the dilettante market. I have a bachelor's degree in aesthetics. No, really. At interviews, it's the first thing people ask about, and I can tell they want to laugh at me. I think they should. It would be a great release for everyone involved. I should have known something was wrong when the recruiting professional for Amazon said my degree was the reason she had called. Majoring in aesthetics seemed like a good idea at the time, something that would free me up for the life of a wandering scholar without earthly ties, a book-oriented Kane from Kung Fu. You see, I'd grown up in far northern Maine in the small town of Fort Kent at the absolute end of U.S. Route 1. There's actually a sign where the road ends, next to the bridge to Canada. Here ends U.S. Route 1, which begins in Key West, Florida. This pronouncement contradicted the idea we were fed in school that Rhodes had no end. Its presence reinforced something that I had always known, even as a child. Growing up between the paper mill and the potato field, it was clear to me that there were places out of which you could not maneuver. Places with ends so dead that they defied inhabitants to imagine another way of life. In my eyes, that sign had always read, "Here is the end of the road, and here is where you must stay." Bragging about how rural your upbringing was is like comparing penises. Someone else's tin shack is always further up the mountain. But I usually win, owing to a unique topological irregularity. No matter where you are, Fort Kent is far, far away. These anecdotes sketch some of Northern Maine's character. A. During winter, gasoline turns to jelly in your tank if you leave your car unheated overnight, so everyone puts a bare light bulb under the hood. My mother goes a step further and puts blankets on the hood, tucking the car in like a baby. B. My sister and I would get very excited when the family drove to Presque Isle, a town about 2 hours south, because they had a traffic light. We would chant, "Traffic light, traffic light, traffic light." This behavior persisted through adolescence. C. I spent one half of my waking hours in the winter months, of which there were nine, cutting, lifting, stacking, and throwing wood. I was a dilettante even then. I was not good at cutting, lifting, stacking, or throwing, but I had a passing familiarity with all the wood-heating arts. When I went off to my hoity-toity micro-IV college, I discovered that all I wanted in life was to dissolve into a mist of intellectualism that would creep around the hills and vales of New England. I would be a professional letter writer. I would be a freelance intellectual. I would study Etruscan vases here, equestrian history there, and simply float about the academic world, never again settling in one place or doing anything real like holding a job or, God forbid, lifting another piece of wood. By naming my course of independent study Aesthetics, I could take a lot of courses that intrigued me, like acting and writing, ignore the ones I felt would waste my time, and generally subvert the entire point of the well-rounded liberal arts education for which I had taken out huge student loans. Ah, youth! Was there nothing I could not accomplish? A young man escapes his fate in the bleak, frozen wastes of Maine to become... I had no idea. All I felt was a vague sense of grand entitlement and a fervent desire never to work an honest day in my life. In some ways, it was the curse of talent. There was a whole list of things in which I showed great promise, but there is a hell of a gap between talented and successful, and to bridge it, you need something called will. My teachers begged me to dedicate myself, just a little, and said I would really blossom. I dug in my heels and refused. I feigned scorn and indignation, but really, I was just too scared to apply myself. I was afraid I would discover my limitations. Better not to know. Better to be free and easy and cultivate an air of smug accomplishment. Nurture my talent. Read another book. Play some more Nintendo. But I miscalculated. I failed to go to graduate school, and it is difficult to be a wandering scholar without scholarship. So I went to Seattle and became disaffected instantly. It was automatic in the 90s. If you entered the Seattle city limits and were a white liberal arts graduate with an uncertain future, you automatically became shiftless, distrustful of authority, and disaffected. We are talking about slackers, an unavoidable element in the cultural landscape of the 90s. Rather than work in fields that grant traditional rewards, money, homes, cars, slackers took up eclectic pursuits, horror movie collecting, fan website building, coffee drinking. A true slacker had so many part-time projects, half-baked ideas, and hazy social initiatives that he was too busy to work a 40-hour week. This was not pedestrian laziness or sloth. Professional slacking was an art. Really, though, it was a newer version of tuning in.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?